Every single day I feel
it. Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never know I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio, the What Are You Made Of Show. It's your boy C-Rock with another great guest for you to find out what they're made of. We're going on a journey to find out the journey to success, because it's invisible too often and we don't get to see what people went through. We watch their success. We see the social media success. We see all this stuff. We don't see the journey a lot of times, the sleepless nights, the stress, the relationship issues, all the stuff that we all go through in life, whether it's business and relationships. And we want to expose that here so that you know you're not alone going through that. And the key is to persist. So today I have Brad Wiseman on the show. Brad is, you know, he survived over 30 years of being in the top 5% of his market as a realtor. He's still going strong now. And we're going to get into what's going on now in the market, of course, and how he's adapting to that. He has a podcast called The Brad Wiseman Show, Real Estate, Real Life, and Everything in Between. And he loves people stories, man. We're aligned in that, Brad. Welcome to the show, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. This is awesome. I don't get to be on this side of the situation too often. A lot of times I'm in your seat there. So it is kind of nice being a guest as opposed to a host. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And it's an honor, man. And I love real estate people, you know, not all realtors. I don't love all realtors. I'll talk about that in a minute.
Neither do I.
I'm sure you don't either. But the thing is, and by the way, also just a foreshadow, we're going to help you get and be a guest. And I'm going to show you the power of that and how it changed my life later on. But more importantly than anything, we got to find out what you're made of. So I got to ask you that question, Brad. What are you made of?
Yeah. When you asked that question, when you gave me that question, it's a tough question to answer. And I'm just going to go with what I thought of first, because I'm one of those that likes to constantly be improving myself and making myself better and growing. I mean, like you said in the beginning there, I've been in the business for actually 33 years in July. I started when I was 22 years old and been able to be successful all that time, which is great. I should say there was one or two years I wasn't that great. 2008 and 2009. We all know what happened then. So I'm not made of anything that I was 5 years ago. I'm not made of anything that I was in 2008. I mean, I always say those kind of things are such learning experiences. 2008 was definitely a character builder, is the best way to explain that one. So yeah, it's all changes. I mean, I'm not made like of who I was, but tomorrow I'll be made of something else, you know?
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah, 100%. Well, look, you know, I got in the business in real estate in 2005. And so it was a great time to get into the business, right?
And then took a big dump.
Yeah, and then I got my mortgage license in 2006. And I was like, wow, this is great. We were selling subprime.
Oh, yeah.
It's 8-9% interest rates, way higher than they are now. And then, you know, some FHAs that were 6%, 6.5%, where they are now. And we thought, you know, we were crushing it. And then it all came down. And then we had a really good run for a while after it got cleared up. But I've been through pretty much all of it. Having a pipeline of loans and find out all the investors that we were, you know, brokering the loans to couldn't take the loans anymore. And we were scrambling. Yep. Our paychecks were on the line. It was crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, there was months where, you know, I remember back at that 2008 time period and from my career starting in 1992 and going from that time to 2008, my income had always increased. So every year I had bumped myself up. I had done a little bit more business. I was meeting more people, you know, and just growing my business. 2007, I saw it starting to come. Like there was this black cloud coming towards me, and nobody could have even told me how bad it was going to get. I mean, it was pretty bad. There was probably, I remember I just met my wife, and she always joked that how did I meet, you know, poor Brad? And I'm like, you know, it just happens sometimes. But it was to the point where there was many months I didn't make anything. You know, we're self-employed as realtors. I didn't make a dime for many months. And when you start doing that, you realize that when they tell you need so many months saved up in order to live, just in case you don't have income, they're right about that. I learned a lot in 2008. I'll tell you what, very educational.
Yeah. And so were you making money prior to that, to the point where you were starting to live a certain lifestyle, right?
Oh,
based on that income.
I say this to people all the time. I tell my business partners who are a little younger than I am. And I say, look, this is what's amazing is that you can't change your lifestyle fast enough. When you start going down that fast and you go down that road, you're selling everything you can, because now all of a sudden you got a place at the beach, you got a Corvette, you got this, you got a place in the mountains. And all of a sudden life just starts crushing. And you can't change your lifestyle fast enough. You can't get rid of things fast enough because you have so much monthly obligation and you're sitting here going, oh my gosh, I have this much obligation and I'm making zero. You know, so it's a big eye opener. But yeah. You know, it's funny. It probably should never happen to me again because I learned a lot through it.
Yeah.
You went through it. You went through it too. I mean, our lifestyles, everybody went through it. Actually, 2008, if anybody tells you as a realtor that they were, you know, doing all kinds of great business, I don't believe that.
Well, you know, one thing I did really good then was I started making money in the mortgage business and every year got better and better.
Yeah.
But I didn't go nuts with spending or increasing my lifestyle at that time until I opened up branches and had my own business. Yeah. Right. Gotcha. And then that was different.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
I up-leveled. So I did experience that. And then recently when I just switched, totally did a pivot and switched industries and everything, you know, I had to take a hit to the old net worth, you know, and sell off some assets to basically live off of, but also invest in the business that I'm running. Yeah. And it's just part of the game, man. And I don't know about you, but I'd love to hear your thought on this. I beat myself up for a little bit. I was like, damn, man, I got to this point. Now I'm down to here and this and that. But you forget, it's just temporary.
Yeah,
like for some reason, Brad, while we're in this, this adversity, the closer in proximity to it, the more it feels permanent.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, I see all the signs too. Don't you notice that too? Like when somebody says to me now, oh, this looks like just like 2008 is coming up. I'm like, no, this is not 2008. This is not what I saw before. And that's, what's nice is that you can see the signs of what's going on. And see, okay, this is okay. We can ride this out. Cause there's also waves in every market. It's not just we go up and then we go completely down. There's just waves that are kind of, you got to ride. And, that's how you stay in any business is you got to be able to ride those waves and you got to be able to save for the times where it's not that great. And also there's times where you got to step out and do something different, you know, like you're doing now, you're doing something different. I think that kind of invigorates you and gets you like ready to go into something. And I think you'll do even better. Even though you said, you know, I had to do something with your budgeting and maybe step back a little bit, but you're going to go forward four times or the book 10 times, you know,
you got 10 times your life, right? Man. Like there's no doubt about it. Like but there is some mornings I wake up and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? But you know, like then there's days where I'm like, this is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. So true.
So I want to know more about you, man. Like, where did it all start for you? Like, what's the story? Where'd you come from? We want to know. Everybody's got a story. Like, where do you want to take us? And look, man, get vulnerable.
All right. Yeah.
You can
I
cry
started.
On the show if you want to.
What's that? What'd you say?
I said you can cry on this show too if you have like a real emotional story.
That's
for
all right.
Us.
If I would go in that direction. So I was going to be a musician. That's where my life started. It started at 7 years old, having a passion for playing drums and doing music, and at 14 started singing and started writing music, and then wrote a lot of music and was doing stuff in New York City, Baltimore, Philadelphia. And then I got on this show back in 1990 called Star Search. You might have heard of that if you're around my age. I was on that, met Ed McMahon. I was a male vocalist. I won one show and then lost the second show. And that was a big eye opener for me because nothing really happened after the show. I was thinking that was going to be something that was really going to help me get to the next point. And I had spent a lot of time and effort and money in writing music and producing music. And, you know, the pay wasn't there. And my dad said to me, hey, you know, you should think of something to fall back on just in case, you know, this whole music thing doesn't get you where you want to be. So what I ended up doing is he said, what about sales? And I said, I don't know about sales. I said, you know, at this point I have a ponytail, not kidding you, down halfway down my back. You know, I didn't look anything like I look now. And I said, well, Dad, I don't know if I'm really looking right for sales, you know? And he said, and then I said, what kind of sales are you thinking? I'm thinking cars, you know, shoes, you know, whatever the basics. And he goes, how about houses? I'm like, you really think somebody's going to buy a house from me? I look. And he said, yeah. He said, you sold me on every toy you ever wanted. So I'm sure you can sell a home. I'm like, all right. So that was how it started. I was 22 years old. It was a backup career. And when I switched my passion from music to real estate, it just took off.
Yeah.
It took off.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
So what year was that?
That was in 1992 was the first year I was in real estate. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're a little older than me. I graduated in 95. Not to do that.
Oh my gosh. Right away. Oh man.
So here's the thing though. I want to point something out here because it just hit me. We have a lot of people talk about, you should have a fallback plan. Our parents are looking out for us, right?
Yeah.
You should have a fallback plan. Like I want to tell my kids, you should have a fallout plan. You should have an up level plan.
That's a great,
this passion doesn't work out. Find out the next thing that's up level. You know, and I haven't heard anybody talking about that.
That's a great way to say it. Great way to say it.
Different perspective, right?
Oh my God. It's a totally different perspective. It actually makes it sound like you didn't lose. You know what I mean? Like I felt when I gave up music, I felt like I was giving up it sounds weird, but like a child. I mean, because when you're a musician and you have that thing going on and you're writing songs, me leaving the music industry was very, very emotional for me to get to say, okay, I didn't make it in this. I'm moving on. But you know, once I got past that and was able to find that I could have passion in something else and that I could transfer that passion. Now, don't get me wrong. I still sing. You know, I still play. I play at one bar every month of the year. It's a third Thursday. I'm at the Railroad House here locally, and I have a piano player that I've been playing with for 30 years. He plays piano, I sing, and we do our thing. It's great. Plus I get free drinks and stuff like that, which is really nice. But yeah, so you know, once I realized it was okay, and you're right, that's not a fall. What did I call it back? Something to fall back on, right? Was that what? That's the term.
Plan
I
B, fall back, plan B. Fall back on.
What about better plan, or like you said, fall up?
Yeah, like what's I next like step? That. Like what's the next stage? Like, yeah. I just think we should like get people to shift that focus because everybody's like, if you don't make it in this, you're not going to be as good. That's not the case. I'll give you an example. So I was talking to my son. And he just finished his senior year in football. They won the state championship 14-0. He didn't start this year.
Awesome.
Which, you know, I thought he should have, but I'm his dad, right? And I just stayed out of it. I didn't get involved with it as far as the coaches or anything. But I told him, and he was, you know, he was working his ass off, going to practice anyway, supporting the team, doing all this stuff, right? And I told him, I said, look, this is not the end game. Yeah. Like, do you know how many people that, like, when I was in high school with that were studs and this and that, and now they're like, I don't even know where the hell they are. If I ran into them, they'd probably fat and out of shape. And I said, some people peak in high school.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Let them peak in high school. You're not peaking in high school.
Yeah.
So, that's great. So like, yeah, there's got to be a different thought process because we're always going in direction of our potential as long as we're intentionally going there. So for you, mm-hmm. once you got into real estate, I had this thing inside of me that I couldn't just be a real estate agent. I had to find, then I couldn't just be a loan officer. Then I had to build. I had always had this thing on my mind, build. And I don't know if that had to do with me just wanting to build people or what it was, but like, what kind of stages have you gone through since you've been in real estate as an agent to like expansion?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, one of the things that, you know, all the way through my career up until 6 years ago, I kept saying, I'd never want to own a real estate company. Never want to own a real estate company. Why would I ever want to own a real estate company? It's a bunch of crap. You got to worry about who's mowing the grass and this stuff. You got to deal with agents, you know, all this different stuff. And about 6 years ago, I got a call from a recruiter from Keller Williams that was looking for somebody to start a franchise here in the area. So 6 years later from that point, now I own part of a Keller Williams franchise. And, you know, one of the things I'm really disappointed in myself that I didn't do, and this is something that's, you know, they always say be prepared for an opportunity. So when an opportunity comes up, you're prepared, right? And I know that and I live by that in a lot of different things that I do. One thing I did not do was get my broker's license because I thought, well, I'm never going to own a real estate company. Why do I need my broker's license? In Pennsylvania, if you don't have your broker's license, you can have your real estate license. But in Pennsylvania, you don't have your broker's license, you cannot own a franchise. You can own the franchise, but you can't run it. You can't actually be the main person. So there was a big kick in the ass right there, like saying, you know, that I should have been prepared for this. And that's one of the steps that I kind of missed along the way. And I guess it's because I was never big on, you know, I didn't go to college or anything like that. So I thought once I started making money, I didn't need to go to the nth degree in the real estate thing by getting my brokers. Well, I probably should have, you know, because opportunities will come to you. If you have the things that people are looking for, if you don't have those things, you have no idea what you're missing. I could have missed many opportunities through my career of owning or being partners in other real estate companies. And I didn't, have the opportunity because you know what? They looked at me and went, he doesn't have his broker's license. He can't do it. You know, so that's something that's really, I think something to think about with business and with anything in your career.
Yeah. And another thing I was thinking about too, is like when I was in the business, I was always thinking about like, focus on building what we have right now. Like we got to build. But then I was taking my eye off of bigger things and bigger problems because I'm like, dude, why would I need bigger problems? I got the stuff to hear. We're trying to freaking make it every day and this and that. Right, we're trying to get better and this and that. But yet I found something powerful, man. I'm a performance expert now. So I've studied over the last 5 years. I've just to the ninth degree, just crazy mentorship. One of the things that I found is that when you have issues and you have small problems, you should always be trying to increase your problems. And when you can increase your problems, you gain capacity, and or you hug the cactus, as my friend Dan Tocchini says. He says, hug the cactus. That's you lean good. Into it.
Yeah.
And all the successful people that I've interviewed and ran into, like they lean into the cactus. They create bigger problems for themselves. If they're having a problem with something, they lean into it and want more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So true.
And, that's something that I think we could both, you know, agree that we in our careers kind of like worried about the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because we get caught in the day-to-day stuff and we forget what got us into that day-to-day stuff that we're doing. You know, we forgot that we stepped out at some point or we did something outside our comfort zone that got us into that. So if you want to get to the next level or to the next thing, whether it be more money or more time or whatever you want in your life, you have to, it's like the 10X thing. You got to take the 80% you're doing, throw that out the window, and then come up with a new 20%, you know, that's going to get you to that next level. And that's something that, you know, when we started this franchise, the same thing. I had no idea how to start a franchise, zero idea. In fact, my partners and I look at each other and go, you know, if I would have known what it was going to take to get to where we are right now, if you would have told me in a 2 or 3 page memo, I would have said, you're out of your freaking mind. I'm not doing this. I'm really comfortable selling homes where I'm at right now. You know, but when you get into it and you start to create out of nothing, that's where it gets fun, man. That's where it's really fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's where people get hung up, man. They feel like they need to know the how.
Yep. Exactly. And so true.
And that's not the right order. The right order is commit.
Yep.
Commit first. And then all of a sudden opportunities, your attention starts to look at things like for the opportunities are based on that commitment. And then you start to see the how, or you find the people that know how to do the how. And all of a sudden you're just figuring it out. So one thing about this is like on your journey in real estate, have you leaned into mentorship at all? Or have you just leaned more into the experience and figuring it out on your own?
A lot of it's just the experience of figuring it out on my own. I probably would have been further if I would have leaned into the mentorship thing, but there wasn't, when I first got into business and even up until about 10 years ago, coaching and mentorship or 10 to 15 years ago was not really the sexy thing that it is today.
Yeah.
You know, now it's such a word that everybody uses. The only time you heard coach years ago was in baseball, football, you know, in the sports. You didn't hear about a coach that I didn't, and not in my little world here. So, you know, I didn't really have it. Now, what I do now, which I'm very grateful for, I'm not a really good reader. Okay. I'm not very good at reading. In fact, I was held back in first grade because I couldn't read that well. So I've never been a really good reader. So reading books for me is very, very tedious. It takes a lot of time. I have a hard time focusing on things, whatever. So the audiobook thing has changed my life. I listen to audiobooks, nothing fictional. I'm just not a fictional guy. I'll watch a movie for fiction. Books, man, I listen to all books that I can. You know, I can't get enough of them now. So it's kind of opened a whole new thing for me because of not being a good reader. But now that the audiobooks have come out, it's changed everything for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's powerful, man. I love reading now, man. I figured something out. I wasn't the best reader either. I figured something out, man. I was passing words I didn't understand. And when I did that, I would blank out. Yep. And then I get to the bottom of the page and I would have actually a physiological reaction from it. And I would be like, what the hell did I just read? And then I was like, screw this. I'm not reading this page over and again. Yeah. But then when I started, I took this course on how to study and I started looking at things and I'm like, whoa, I scan a page before I read it. This seems like it takes longer, right? This is crazy. Yeah. And I know you like listening to books, but when you figure this thing, little thing, I'm going to tell you guys out, Brad, everybody listening, when I tell you this, I love reading now because it's just amazing. So I scan a page, right? Mm-hmm. And if I see a word as I scan a page that catches my attention, immediately I look it up. Mm. I'll take the time to do that initially, right? It takes a little longer, right?
Yeah.
But then once I start doing, my vocabulary increased and now I don't have to do it as much because I don't see words that I don't get much anymore.
Yeah.
And then I just read the page. And if I see, then I come across a word I don't understand. I stop, I look that word up, I go back to the sentence, make sure it makes sense. And then I continue. It's increased my reading speed 5x.
Wow.
And now it's like, now when we all have this thing, and this is just not just a lesson with reading. This is a lesson in business and relationships. What we're not good at, we don't like. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a second.
So true. So true.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, think exactly. about, like, you yeah. just said, I don't really, reading's not my thing because I got held back in first grade and I'm not good at it.
Well, it still pisses me off. I didn't want to right. be held back in first grade. Right. I mean, seriously, you try that. It wasn't
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, I know. I know.
All my friends went ahead of me.
I can relate. And think about all the other things in your life that you don't like.
Yeah.
Well, am I good at it? No. That's why I don't like it. So, yeah, anyway, I just want to throw that out there.
No, it's a good. That's a really good point. That's a changed. Good point. I appreciate the observation of that. That's cool.
Now, you can't. I don't advise anybody going jogging or going on a treadmill or something like that and reading a book, okay? That's when we're listening and when we're working out in the gym, doing weights, you can't read. You listen to books. I listen
that's
to books,
That's when
too.
I do it, yeah.
But there's something about the words on the paper, once I figured this out, that I'm like, I don't know, man. It's just wild. That's cool. I can't be the only one.
No, of course you're not. No, of course you're not.
So, Brad, what's next for you, man? Like, what are you guys, like, focused on? I mean, you got a podcast here. How long have you had the podcast? Tell us about what's going on now.
Podcast is since April of, April 13th, to be exact, 2020. I think we all know what was happening in April of 2020. Our world was going upside down, and I'm one of those that cannot sit still or be at home. So I had to do something. And, you know, of course, once again, income starts going down as COVID is taking effect and we can't work. And our state shut down real estate. So our governor said that we were not essential. So that was not good for real estate. We couldn't go out. We couldn't show homes, couldn't do anything. So I decided, I said to my wife, I said, I'm gonna start a podcast. She's like, right now? I said, yes. She goes, you're going to have to spend money to do it. And she goes, I thought we were going to start cutting back because we don't know where this COVID thing's going to end. I said, yeah, there's any time to do it. This is the time to do it. I said, so I went on Sweetwater, which is a music store that you can go online. I went on there and ordered the stuff and started the podcast. And it was called Real Estate and You up until January of this year. And then in January this year, it switched over to the Brad Wiseman Show because I was doing more than just real estate. I wanted to hear more stories. I wanted to get involved in more people's lives than just talk about real estate. So now it's called Real Estate, Real Life, and Everything in Between. And, you know, we're just having fun doing that. And it's growing. And I'm working on, I had meetings yesterday. I'm working on growing the show, working on getting on different places. I mean, same thing that you're kind of doing. I really enjoy it. I mean, to me, it's just very, it's very therapeutic for me. In some weird way. And also I learn a lot. Think about it. I mean, I have people on here talking about such weird, different things and I get to learn, you know, from people, which is awesome.
Yeah, dude, I can tell you the therapy for sure.
Yeah.
And the other thing is when we get off of here, I'm going to share some secrets with you on how to grow your show. So, cool. But yeah, no, 100%. And the other thing is, let me ask you this. First of all, I love the name, the new name. Great. You're branding yourself, which is to me, I like it a lot better. Cool. And I think that you're going to see that benefit very, very fast with that. And then you leave yourself open to so much flexibility there.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why I did it. We were going to call it something else. We spent 6 months with a marketing team and me and my producer and everything. And we just sat down and finally it just came up. We kept coming back to my name because with my name, I can do whatever I want. If you call it something, it kind of sometimes has to lend in that way. And I just didn't want to be trapped in that anymore. And I was trapped in there for 2 years and it got me where I am right now with the show. But real estate is a lot of my life, but I like a lot of other stuff besides real estate too. So that's what's nice about the show the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, so the show, do you like one episode a week or how often do you do
it? It's once a week. It's every Thursday at 7 PM. We record them obviously ahead of time. We were doing them live for a while. That got to be a little crazy because then people were late and, you know, it's supposed to start at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They're not here. And also it was just stressful because I could only do one show at a time. You know, I couldn't bank anything up. So when I went on vacation, I didn't have any, you know, there was no shows or we did a rerun. So now we record them. I probably record about two or three a week. So we're up until June right now.
Yeah.
As far as airing. But yeah, it's been great and I'm having good guests and I'm starting to be a guest, which is really fun too. And I want to have you on my show if you would like to do that at some point.
Hell yeah, man. We'll light it up for sure. For sure. Yeah. So what have you noticed with the podcast? Okay. What has it done for your business and brand? Like, have you noticed any marked differences?
I think the big thing for real estate is it's funny. I'll be showing a house to somebody and, they'll be like, they'll start saying the stuff that I just said on a podcast and they'll be like, well, yeah. And this is what I remember you saying about this, that you have to be careful about this with the mold or all that stuff. And I'm like, will you listen to my show? And they're like, yeah, we listen to it every week. I'm like, that's awesome. You know? So, and then also just people I see out and about now, it's starting to get to the point where locally they'll be like, are you on a podcast? Do you do a podcast? You know, so that's cool. I mean, and that's, you know, it makes you feel if there's one person that's listening and they're getting help from it, that's awesome. I think it's great.
Yeah, I love it, man. I'll share a couple of little hacks for you. And
cool.
Obviously, I know a lot of this stuff from doing this for so long now and with dealing with all these other different podcasters. So I'll share some things.
That's awesome.
All right. So as we wind this down, I want to know about your thoughts on the real estate market right now. Obviously, the shortage of inventory.
Yeah.
Rates obviously went up. They settled down a little bit. You know, I'm in Ocean City, Maryland, and my wife's really down here. Is that where you
are? You're in Ocean City, Maryland?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a place on 124th Street.
Oh, get out. Yeah.
123rd Street. Not 124th, 123rd. I'm not going to
tell everybody the exact location, but.
Yeah. No, but that's amazing.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. We'll have to get together in person.
Yeah. Sometime. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're down here and, you know, we got the condo market and we see like, you know, I'm watching still. I'm not in the business, but what are your thoughts on what's going on and how have you adapted? And, you know, just give us the rundown.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we've been in a inventory issue for the past, well, ever since 2008, is where it started. And we're dealing with that. We're dealing with that on a national level. We're dealing with that on local levels. Locally here, our biggest issue is that we don't have a lot of new construction. A lot of builders that were here in 2008 ended up folding in 2010, 2011. And they got gun shy. They're worried. You know, there's not a lot of developers coming into this area because a lot of them really got hurt. I think we are going to see increases in prices for the next 5 years at least, because I don't care what anybody says, and this is just my own opinion, just from 33 years of experience. I don't see, unless we come up with some sort of inventory help, you know, where they make it easier for developers to build, get rid of some of the red tape, we will see building come back in a much more increased way, which will be like what it was in 2008. And I don't know if you've ever known this, but from 2008 until now, we are probably around 7 million to 8 million homes depleted in inventory from 2008 till now, because that's how many weren't built because of what that did. So we're trying to catch up, and it's really hard to do, because once you lose 3 years of building because of what happened, how do you replenish that? And in our countries, we got more population coming in, whether you like it or not. Not to talk about borders, but we got shit coming. We got people coming in.
We talk about whatever we want here, man.
No, but that's what I'm saying. But there's people coming across the border. Yeah. They have to live somewhere.
We have no idea how many people are coming across the border.
What's that?
We have no idea how many people are coming across the border.
That's the problem. Well, they're saying 7 million. Okay. They're saying 7 million, whatever. So if that's what it is, they have to live somewhere, whether it's temporary or not. And everybody's like, yeah, but they're not buying our houses. No, but they're living maybe in an apartment, which then is taking up that part. Then that it's a trickle down or trickle up, whatever you want to call it. It affects the housing market. So that's a whole different, you know, topic. But that's some part of the issue too. And we have also interest rates are higher now. So a lot of our baby boomers are in homes that are at 2.5% or 3.5%. They're not going to move and then downsize and pay more and also pay more interest rate. That's not going to happen. So, you know, I think one of the things too is that federal government needs to stay out of the part where they're saying they want to get more people to be able to buy houses. That is not our issue right now. We have plenty of buyers. I had 30 some showings on a listing yesterday. One person got it. Okay. So our problem is not people being able to afford homes. Our problem is that we don't have enough homes. And that way, if you bring inventory in, that'll fix the pricing problem.
Yeah, like what President Biden said. Look, I'm a guy that's not okay. I don't care a shit about politics. I don't care a shit about whatever. I care about what's best for all people. Okay,
absolutely.
What's going to help us win?
Yeah,
if
exactly.
That makes me left, right. I just want to. So, but when President Biden said in a State of the Union about $400,
I heard the
payment
same thing
to everybody per month. Yep. That's going to increase demand, less supply. That doesn't help. Here's what needs to happen. And I don't know if this is the right thing as far as capitalism, pro-capitalism and all that, but what needs to happen is hedge funds need to be able to get the frick out of the single family home market.
Yeah.
They need to make them, and there's an actual bill right now, and Democrats actually pass this. I'm more leaning right, but I saw Democrats pass this, and I might be wrong with this, but just as this me analyzing the situation, hedge funds need to get out of investing in single family homes, period.
Yeah.
Because that's what's causing the issue right now. And then they need to have, and they have a bill right now that says in the next 10 years, they have to unload their single family portfolio and put that money somewhere else. And that's going to free up housing.
But somebody's living in those houses.
Well, renters.
Yeah. Well, that's still taking up an occupant. So if they sell those houses to owners, where are the renters going to go?
Yeah, that's true. But the renters could buy.
where are they going to buy if we don't have enough houses? Yeah, that's
true. Well, they could buy those homes.
See, this is where I...
Yeah, you know what? That is true. I didn't think about that part.
The shit I think about at nighttime. So it's still... Here's the thing. If I have five things here and there's six people, it doesn't matter which way you do that.
Oh, no. Here's the answer. We need to build more multifamily properties.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? That's going to shift those renters into the multifamily properties. We need more apartments and we need
more... Absolutely.
That's the difference. Well, I forgot about that part. Yeah, nope, so those people that are renters, they got to get the hell out if they can't buy and move into wherever they can afford. Yep. And then let people that can buy single family homes and the families buy those homes. That's the thought. I don't
agree.
Know.
I agree.
I don't know if that's free market or capitalism or not. If it's hard to that or hurts it, I don't know. But
the biggest issue, like I said, we have here locally is actually more the local government has made it. Let's just put it this way. In our area here, if you bought a piece of land today and you want to put 50 homes on it, or you want to put 50 semi-detached homes, whatever it is, from the time you purchase it to the time you put a shovel in the ground is 4 years.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Do you want to wait 4 years to get your money back?
Yeah.
You want to wait for this? Seriously. And that whole time, you don't even know if it's going to be approved. So you could be spending $1 million in permits, attorney's fees, all this stuff, studies, environment. Hey, God forbid, if there's a bog turtle there or some kind of different frog, you're definitely screwed. You could go 3 years, they'll find the turtle and you can't build there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the problem. That's a lot of the problem is that.
It's going to be interesting, man. We're going to have to sit back and watch and see what happens, I guess. But
yeah,
Brad, listen, man, it's been great to have you here. I look forward to collabing with you here in the future, man. And thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Guys, go to bradweismanshow.com. Check Brad out. He's also a real estate agent and part owner of the franchise in the Reading area there. Go check him out if you have any real estate needs in the Pennsylvania area. I hope you're an Eagles fan, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. We're friends now. So thanks for being here. Thanks listening to the listeners. Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe. Go to my Instagram and check out Mikey C Rock and make sure you're engaging with the content we're putting out to make sure we remind you that you're unstoppable to live in the life of your dreams. Until next time, it's your boy C Rock signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of Show. Beat That One. Music license.